Holy King, Comforter, Spirit of Truth, art everywhere present and fill us all things, treasury of good things and giver of life, come and dwell within us and cleanse us of all impurity and save our souls, O good one. Holy God, holy mighty, holy immortal, have mercy on us. Glory to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, both now and ever and unto the ages of ages. Amen. Welcome back to Reason and Theology. Your host, Michael Lofton, joined today by Alex from Voice of Reason, who's going to co-host this with me. And we are interviewing Father Chris Zuger. Father Chris, welcome to the show. How are you?
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
It's an honor to have you. Alex, how you been?
I've been great since the last time I saw you yesterday, about 24 hours ago. I'm doing wonderful. Now I've moved up to co-host, so I feel like I'm really... Yeah. Making it here. I'm really moving up the corporate ladder, if you will. I'm excited, and I'm so excited that I have my priest. This is my priest. I'm going to be territorial about this. Father Chris Zuger is my priest, and I'm so happy, so blessed to have him on here with you, Michael, for you and for all of your great viewers to get to meet my priest, Father Chris Zuger.
Yeah, Father Chris, I saw one of your videos on TikTok, and in fact, I reviewed it, and I was very impressed by it, because you were talking about icons and objections, especially that Protestants have to icons, and you responded in a very succinct and helpful way, and I thought, wow, this was a really good answer, and I really appreciated it. So I'm really excited to have you on. You're putting out with Alex a lot of great content on TikTok, so I'm glad to see that. In fact, I think y'all are also putting it out on YouTube. Is that right?
We sure are.
Yeah. So good stuff. So I'm excited to see it. The more Eastern Catholic content that we can get out there, the better. So Father, today you have three Byzantine Catholic martyrs that you're going to tell us about today. Is that right?
I hope so.
Is that right? Well, go and do you have any of their relics with you? Did I misunderstand that? We were talking earlier.
So I have Blessed Theodore Ramsha, mm-hmm. who is the first one to be killed. And this little icon has a piece of his beard.
Oh, wow.
In it. When they were able to retrieve the body in the 90s, that's what they took for first class relics, was to get the pieces of his hair and his beard from the tomb in Uzhhorod. That's quite a story, actually, because the... the cathedral had been given over to the Russian Orthodox during Soviet times. And then when they went down to retrieve the body after the church was given back to us, things were in terrible shape down there. So anyway, so we have a piece of that. And then this is Blessed Paul Peter Goidich. So Bishop Theodore Ramsha was killed in 1947. And he died in prison in Czechoslovakia in 1960. And this is a first-class relic of Blessed Paul Peter Goidich that I got from Slovakia. And then...
Is that one of his bones or a piece of his bone? Yeah.
Yeah. And then this is Blessed Basil Hopko, who was poisoned. He survived prison, but there was an agent who poisoned him in 1976. And so this is also a first-class relic, a piece of his bone from his tomb in Slovakia. So these are both from Prešov, from the cathedral in Prešov. So I've been over there a number of times interviewing people who were in the camps, priests who were ordained right before the takeover. And I've written about the underground church quite a bit and studied all of that. So I guess go for questions. That might be the easiest way to go for it.
Yeah, well, maybe tell us a little bit about their lives too. Let's start with each one of them and kind of walk through them, if you don't mind. And then we'll have some follow-up questions as we go.
So Blessed Theodore was born in Austria-Hungary. Mm-hmm. And well, they all three were born in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And he was the son of a railroad worker. So it's very unusual, because at that time period in the 1920s and 30s, the majority of the vocations going into the Eparchy of Mukachevo were from priestly families. And he was not. He had no priest relatives at all. He was from an ordinary blue-collar working-class family in northern Transcarpathia, and studied in Rome. And his goal was to, he was hoping that he could sneak into the Soviet Union someday. So he studied communism, Marxism, dialectical materialism. He studied in Rome at the Rusicum, the Russian college, was ordained as a Byzantine Catholic priest, and then went back to Czechoslovakia during the big period of crisis in 1938, you know, was the World War was coming, Second World War was coming, and was assigned to a little village in the mountains, a tough area to work in, very poor, very simple, but they were very much his own people. And he wrote, the last letter that he wrote that got to Italy was, well, I'm not going to the Soviet Union, but basically the Soviet Union is coming to me. Mm. In 1944, the Red Army came to liberate, quote unquote, the Subcarpathian region from Hungarian rule and Nazi occupation. And the people there did not know it, but a secret deal had been made between Stalin and the president of Czechoslovakia, and the whole province was given to the Soviet Union. So that is now the westernmost part of Ukraine, annexed into the Ukrainian Socialist Republic. And as a result, they were trapped behind not just the Iron Curtain, but they were stuck in the Soviet Union. And he was subjected to tremendous pressure because he had just been consecrated the youngest bishop in the world. He was 33 years old.
Wow.
And he consecrated two other bishops secretly that the Russians didn't know about. And they put him under great pressure to join the Russian Orthodox Church and abandon Catholicism for the Orthodox Church, because the Orthodox Patriarchate was collaborating with Stalin at the time.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So he would come out of the interrogation sessions and his cassock would be completely drenched in sweat because he said it was so terrible. But the priests that I interviewed told me, who were ordained by him, they all told me separately, which was really interesting. Each guy and his wife and the widows of the priests that died, they all said, if you knew Theodore Ramja, you knew Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what a great way to be remembered by their people. So, So finally he was murdered, brutally murdered, because he wouldn't break with Rome. So
he maintained communion with Rome until the end and was willing to die for it.
Die for it. And that was his motto. He would go into every village in the eparchy, in the diocese. He went to every single village, the most remote village. He went to all of them between 1944 and his martyrdom. And he would tell the people to die for Christ is to live forever. And that was how he ended all of his sermons. So that really became the theme for the people who were brave enough to stay. It was really powerful.
You know, there's so many people today who are just willing to break communion with Rome so easily. And it's unfortunate, but it's encouraging to hear of somebody who said, you know what, I'm not going to do this, even if it means I'm going to be killed.
And there was a lot of people who were like that.
Yeah.
Far more than we realize.
Yeah. Yeah, the things that people died for, we're willing to just throw away as if they mean nothing. Alex, go ahead and jump in here. Any questions or comments that you wanted to offer?
Well, first of all, Michael, this is exactly why I wanted Father Chris to appear today to talk about the stories of these three martyrs, because very few people know about these saints, these martyrs, and the fact that they were martyred because they refused to break communion with Rome. Wow. And these are the kinds of stories that need to be well known by the entire Christian community. Because as you already pointed out, Michael, we have so many people that are just, it's almost like to them breaking communion with Rome isn't a big deal. And here you have in the last century under the circumstances that these men were in, going to their death because they didn't want to break communion with Rome. And what I always say over and over and over again in my videos, and I get so much criticism for it from non-Catholics, I say to be in communion with Jesus Christ, to be in full communion with Jesus Christ is to be in communion with Rome. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is. To be in full formal communion mm-hmm. with Christ in his church is to be in communion with Rome. And there are so many people that criticize and even laugh at that idea, but they just don't realize that there are men like these who willingly died for that truth, that to be in communion with Rome is to be in communion with Christ. So that's why Father Chris is here today, because people need to know how serious this is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because the church is an extension of the incarnation. And so if there is an impediment or a lack of communion to an extent with the church, there then is a lack of communion to a degree with Christ himself. I'm not saying that people who are non-Catholic share no communion with Christ. I'm not saying that at all. Clearly, right. Especially those who are baptized do. But what I'm saying is there's an imperfection there, because we don't put a huge wedge in division between Christ and his church. And we see, again, the church is kind of an extension of the incarnation. So, yeah, that's a helpful observation that you bring up there. Father, you know, is this something that you see pretty often? People are just, they see communion with Rome as something that's just adiaphora. It's just take it or leave it. It's not that big of a deal. You know, if you're in communion with Rome, great. If not, is that kind of something that you see often in your ministry?
I think in America, we've developed a problem whereby we say, well, as long as you're being good, mm-hmm. or as long as you believe in Jesus Christ, it's okay. You know, mm-hmm. It's a watering down. And I think it's the legacy of poor catechesis that's taken place in this country. Mm-hmm. And my sisters said to me that every time I would go to Eastern Europe, every time I would come back, I came back more intensely Catholic because I was interacting with all of these people who had to make conscious choices in Czechoslovakia, the Soviet Union, and Hungary. And there were lots of consequences for those choices. And then to have somebody say, well, who cares if I'm Catholic or not? And I would get all worked up and say, well, I do.
Yeah.
I care whether or not you're Catholic, because, you know, and especially I think for Byzantine Catholics, because, you know, obviously there's, you know, the Orthodox alternative is available you know, around the country. Mm-hmm. And I always get disturbed, you know, that people would just kind of casually walk out of our church. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have such a legacy of fidelity and of devotion and intensity of faith. And how can you just toss that?
Yeah.
So...
yeah, I think it's because some people just don't believe that communion with Rome is something that is expected of us from Christ. But my thing is, well, if communion with Rome is something that is biblical and is part of the tradition of the first millennium, in fact, the faith of the ecumenical councils,
right,
then this is not something that is up for debate.
It's very important. You know, what happened at Chalcedon, Peter has spoken. You know, when the Tome of Leo was read, you know, and the idea, you know, that it's Peter, you know, it's a church where Peter and Paul are buried. And it's very obvious because, you know, Peter's buried under the basilica and St. Paul is buried under the altar, the St. Paul's Basilica outside the walls. You know, here we have the two apostles there. But that, you know, the idea is that Peter has such a significant role. And in the college club that we have in our parish, now, I always tell them, the young people every year, I said, you know, when you start breaking with Peter, you lose elements of faith. And the further you go, the more you can lose. Mm-hmm. And you just see that in history since the Reformation. But, I mean, you just see that throughout church history. you know, with all of the breaks that have taken place. So, you know, and you have to make that decision.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I had a big crisis of faith and I had to read my way back in and pray my way back in. The Byzantine Catholic Church was a big part of that for me. And there were, you know, students around me and faculty around me, and they would say, well, you know, as long as you're happy, and saying that's not good enough. Not that I'm happy, but that I have the faith that was handed down to the apostles and is still handed down.
Yeah, but so many people just don't realize that's the faith. And I'll point to things in the ecumenical councils. You mentioned Chalcedon. That's a great one. Another one is the Sixth Ecumenical Council, where Pope Agatho is writing to the emperor. It's read in front of the council. The council fathers accept it. And it clearly lays out that the papacy and its teaching authority will be undefiled unto the end. So you see that it's infallibility in its teaching office. But you also see that he bases it upon the promise of Jesus,
right,
that Jesus made to Peter. And so clearly the papacy is a divine institution. So if it's a divine institution, according to the ecumenical councils, you cannot break communion with that, because if you do, you're now breaking communion with something that Christ established.
Right, with Jesus himself has done.
Yes. So, but people don't see it that way because they're ignorant of the councils. But they might even try to cite the seven ecumenical councils and think that they're upholding them, when in fact, they go against this notion that you could just break communion with Rome.
In Moscow, at St. Louis Church, which was the French church in Moscow, it was the only Catholic church to survive in Moscow. And at one point in the Russian Republic, in the Soviet Union, there were only two Catholic churches open, the French church in Leningrad and the French church in Moscow. But in St. Louis, in the 1920s and 30s and 40s, they had a big banner up at the high altar. Upon this rock, I shall build my church, and, you know, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And St. Louis Church is next to the headquarters of the KGB.
Mm. Wow.
The Rossiya Insurance Company building was taken over by the secret police, and they had cameras trained on the doors of St. Louis to film the people going in and out on Sunday morning. And I thought that was so powerful that they had that particular banner in the heart of godless communism, you know, that here, that was so important to the congregation to look at that every morning, to see those words in Russian, you know, and that the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And that's important, because that's a promise from whom?
Sure.
You know, that's from Christ.
Sure.
Yeah. And that was the thing with these people that I would work with in Eastern Europe. They were just so deeply inspiring.
Yeah, Alex, jump in here.
Well, Father, I couldn't help but think of, you know, just now as you tell that story about, you know, the fact that the KGB was spying on the Catholic Church in Russia, I couldn't help but think about what's been going on recently here in this country. Things have come out that our own FBI has been spying on, infiltrating certain Catholic communities here. And, you know, the old adage really rings true that those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Yeah. And, you know, we think about that, oh, happening in Russia and the Soviet Union, you know, and well, it can happen here, and it actually has in some cases. And that's something, you know, again, history is so important, because again, if you don't know your history, you don't know where you're going, and you can fall into the same traps, the same holes that people fell into before. And I think that we need to learn this history to make sure that we don't suffer the same fate as people, you know, before. So history repeats itself.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing in interreligious dialogue, is you have to understand the history. You got to know where people were at a particular time. You got to understand what happened. You have to know the reality, not propaganda, not what has become a popular meme or something. You know, you got to know what really happened. You have to really you got to look. Yeah, got to read books. You got to look stuff up. You have to know what happened. Yeah, and as for the FBI, I think they have a few other things to worry about in this country other than, you know, the thousands of Catholics who go to Latin Mass. I think yeah, there's a few other things in this country to worry about. Gee whiz. Yeah. That's nuts. That's nuts.
Yeah, Father, you're talking here about, and I know we have two more martyrs we're going to get to here in a moment, but I want to ask you a question. You're talking about Eastern Catholics who were persecuted under the communist regime. You know, one curious thing is whenever I told my Orthodox friends that I was going back into communion with Rome, you know, from Orthodoxy to Catholicism. One thing that was brought up, because they knew that, you know, I agree with the Eastern Catholics. They said, well, look, Eastern Catholics are just responsible for just so many murders and atrocities under the communist period. And yet you're talking about, in fact, Eastern Catholics who are being persecuted during the communist period. Can you maybe set the record straight? What's the truth here? Were Eastern Catholics the victims, or were they the ones committing the murders?
Holy cow, we're the victims. We're the victims. Good heavens. Victimology is such a big thing nowadays, right? Everybody's a victim. I can be a victim. I identify as a victim. But seriously, the thing that people don't need to understand is the reason the Soviet Union was so intensely against Eastern Catholics was that Eastern Catholics, by virtue of their communion with Peter, are connected to a church outside of the Soviet Union and outside of the Warsaw Pact after 1945. And Rome was independent. You know, the Holy See is independent. And by maintaining that connection and that communion, they were identifying with a universal church that emphasized human rights and the right and dignity of the individual. Mm-hmm. Now, communism does not do that. We see mm-hmm. that in modern China. In communism, the value of the human being is through your role in the state, for the state, and what you produce economically. Mm-hmm. You don't have an inherent dignity as a child of God. So that's one thing. Mm. And Catholicism emphasizes that very, very much. The second thing is the Orthodox churches in all of the communist countries ultimately collaborated, starting particularly with the Russian Orthodox Patriarchate during World War II, partly because they're trying to survive, to be fair. You know, there was very little left of Russian Orthodoxy by 1943. And they were able to find 12 surviving bishops out of an mm-hmm. enormous church. And there were only a few hundred churches that were still working in the Soviet Union in 1939. So they were very, they had been through a terrible, terrible time. And they saw this collaboration as a way of surviving. And then the other Orthodox in Poland, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Bulgaria, they saw this as a way of guaranteeing at least a minimal survival. And they followed the Patriarchate of Moscow in its example. Wow. The third thing is that Moscow really wanted the Greek Catholics back, even if they had never been part of the Moscow Church, like our Byzantine Catholic Church, the Ruthenian Church had never been part of the Moscow Patriarchate. They wanted all of these people back because this would be a great triumph. This would be a great moment of victory to bring the Eastern Catholics back. And the propaganda always says a joyful reunion, even though all the bishops were in jail or dead, the priests were in jail or dead, people were being arrested, and church was being driven underground. So in Czechoslovakia, the church was driven underground in 1950. In Soviet Union, the Ukrainian Catholics were driven underground between 45 and 47. The Ruthenian Church, the Byzantine Catholic Church in America, the mother church of the Byzantine Catholic Church in America, that was driven underground in 1949. In Romania, it was driven underground in 1948. And in Poland, the majority of the people were deported out of their villages and scattered around Western and Northern Poland. And so survived in a very fragmented fashion without any bishops. And in Bulgaria, it was a very small community that survived, barely legal. Hungary was the best. And even Hungary wasn't great. I mean, I say it was the best, relatively speaking. So you have thousands of people sent to the Gulag. You have hundreds of people executed. You have bishops thrown into prison, where they all died in prison. In the Ukrainian church, all of their bishops died in the camps or in jail. And the Ruthenian church, Bishop Ramsha was martyred. Bishop Petro Oros was executed publicly in 1953. Bishop Hira survived, but I mean, under great difficulty. So that's a lot of victims. It's thousands and thousands of people. And then you have, you know, how long this went. Like people would always say to me, we believed in the promises of Our Lady of Fatima, you know, that Russia would be converted, but we had no idea when. And you have to remember that 1989 was a big shock when everything started to unravel. No one expected it. And it was very, very surprising. So the suffering the people went through, the secret seminary programs, secret monasteries, secret religious education, secret liturgies in people's homes at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's an amazing story of what people were able to do. And that the KGB itself thought in 1989, they thought, well, they estimated in the territory of the Transcarpathian province, there might be 5,000 to 10,000 people. And instead it was 150,000. Right. Wow. What?
Wow.
And in the Ukrainian Republic, maybe 50,000 to 60,000. And instead it was in the millions, you know, it's 3 million people had stayed in the underground. So it's a phenomenal story that should be told more.
But it kind of left us with very little resources, because from what I understand, they took a lot of our churches during that period.
They took all the churches.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've had a difficulty in recovering since.
Very hard. Very, very hard. And it's a complicated issue trying to get churches back. They've all decided, even though the courts would rule in the favor of the Greek Catholics in many cases, and after 1991 and say, you know, they should get this church back, this church back. And then the Orthodox didn't want to vacate the church. And like for our mother diocese, the Eparchy of Mukachevo, when Bishop Milan Shashi came along, he said, we're not going to do this anymore. We're just going to build new churches. Mm-hmm. We have to build a living church. We have to build a church of living stones, of living faith. You know, forget it. You know, we're not going to fight anymore, which is a healthy attitude.
Yeah,
it is a healthy attitude. We got some of the main churches back that we needed. And then, you know, we've built so many others. So, it's quite a story. It is quite a story.
Yeah. Alex, any follow-ups here before we move on to the next martyr?
Well, everyone who's watching, I would just remind them that the effects of this are still felt to this very day. The pastor here at this parish, Our Lady of Perpetual Help, he was in the seminary, and you know, Father Chris could tell you more a little bit about what he went through. He's here now in New Mexico where we are, but he suffered a great deal just being a Catholic priest. He's from Ukraine in that area. Some of the stories, maybe we won't get into it now. Maybe one day Father Artur can give us an interview. Of what he went through. This was recently. This was recent. The effects of this are still being felt to this day. So don't think that this is something that happened a long time ago and it's over and everything is fine now. No, that, you know, this is still very much something that changed everything, and it changed so many people's lives. So this was very recent. This wasn't that long ago. This is something that happened recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, within
people are still alive from that time period.
Yeah.
Well, Father, tell us about the second martyr here.
So the second martyr is Blessed Paul Peter Goidich. He was the bishop of Prešov in Czechoslovakia before the war and during the war. He was very active during the war in rescuing Jews. And he personally saved 27 Jews. And the Greek Catholic Church in the Slovak Republic saved at least 1,200 to 1,500 Jews in the different parishes. And also the Sisters of St. Basil and the Basilian Fathers and the Sister Servants of Mary Immaculate were involved with him. So they did a lot. And at the end, and I bring that up because when Czechoslovakia was restored after World War II, it was under Russian occupation, as was all of Eastern Europe. And the Jewish survivors went to Bishop Goidich and they told him that a lot of them were going to move to Israel as communism became more entrenched in Czechoslovakia in 46, 47, 48, and especially 48. And they said, you should come with us because you're next. You know, they knew what the communists had done in the Soviet Union to Eastern Catholics, and they told Bishop Goidich and then Bishop Popko, they said, you should come with us because they're not going to let you go. They're not going to spare you. And they both said, you know, we have to stay here with our people. And when they were both arrested, Bishop Goidich and Bishop Popko, those Jewish survivors submitted testimony on their behalf that they were anti-fascist and had been rescuers in the Holocaust, and that, you know, the communists should not be persecuting these guys. But that didn't do any good, obviously, because it was part of a larger strategy to destroy the church. So Goidich was arrested. Well, they both were arrested in 1950. In 1950, a number of priests were and lay people were forced to go to a meeting in Prešov in eastern Slovakia, and they were told it was yet another peace meeting. Those were big things the communists liked to do to show that communism was peace-loving as opposed to warmongering America. And instead, when they got there, they found out they were supposed to denounce the union with Rome, and the room was filled with armed guards, and they were told to vote to break the union of 1646 with the Holy See and become Russian Orthodox. And the bishops were not there. The bishops were arrested that day at the cathedral and taken away and put into prison. And they were, Goidich was subjected to a show trial after torture. And Hopko was brutally tortured also. And they were both sentenced to these terribly long sentences. I think Goidich's sentence was life, if I remember. And then they lowered it to 25 years. But I mean, he would never get out. And Blessed Paul Peter Goidich was kept in, moved 20 times to different prisons. To keep him from developing connections with other prisoners, especially priests. And the majority of the priests in the Eparchy of Prešov were imprisoned or they were exiled to Western Czechoslovakia. A few signed to join Orthodoxy in the Eparchy. Most of those guys that did sign did so because they broke under torture or because their parishioners asked them. They were afraid that there would be Russian priests imported into their parishes. So, and a number of those guys secretly reconciled with the Holy See and secretly returned to Catholic unity. And that turned out to be really important because they kept those parishes where they were serving in Czechoslovakia with a Catholic identity, so that in 1968, during the Prague Spring, when the church was partially re-legalized, those were churches that voted to become Catholic again. So Goidich had the stigmata, at least in his hands. We know definitely in his hands because the guards always made him wear gloves when his relatives would come to visit. And he also had the gift of bilocation. If a prisoner was dying and there was no priest near him, Goidich would appear and give him absolution, even though the guards could see him in a factory or cell, and could say, and they testified later after communism ended, that this happened frequently. And he developed cancer, and they offered him the position of Orthodox Patriarch of Czechoslovakia if he would break with the Holy See, that he would be restored as a bishop, that he would have full freedom, he would give a good salary, a car, but those weren't the things he was interested in, you know. And but these were the things communists were interested in, oddly enough. So he would not break, and he prayed that he would die on his birthday. And because two of his predecessors had died suddenly without sacraments, he died that a priest would be available to hear his confession. And the night that he was dying, a Roman Catholic priest prisoner was brought into the infirmary. And when he realized that Bishop Gojdič was dying, he crawled across the floor and he heard his confession and gave him absolution. Wow. And so, and he died on his birthday. So both of his requests to God were granted. So wow. He died in 1960 in the Leopoldov prison. The family put a cross on his grave, but the guards would always knock it down. And they paid a guard to tell them, you know, where he was buried. So that's Gojdič's story. It's a remarkable story.
You said he had the stigmata. That's interesting. I haven't heard of the stigmata in any you know, in the Eastern tradition. Is this unique to him?
Yeah, as far as I know, it is. Oh. I've never heard of any other Eastern saint, Orthodox or Catholic, with the wounds of Jesus. That was something when they, and I asked about that in Slovakia. Mm-hmm. People who had known him, and I asked them, you know, was this true or was it, you know, I mean, it could have been a pious story. And, you know, the clincher was that it was the guards who confirmed it. That's the interesting part. You know, the communist guards who had no stake in this. So,
The Byzantine Padre Pio.
In a sense.
Because you could bilocate too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bilocation was a fascinating thing. So, yeah. That was quite something.
And, you know, tell us a little bit more about Hopko, if you
don't know. So Basil Hopko is a great intercessor for people with depression because he was supposed to come to America. His mother had emigrated and was in New Jersey. He was supposed to come to America and work in America as a priest, but he had to have this big surgery and the money went to his operation instead. So then he was ordained and served in Czechoslovakia. He was consecrated as a bishop, auxiliary bishop of Prešov, with the right of succession because Gojdič knew he would be arrested and Hopko was younger than him. Hopko was made to stand in the same spot for days and forbidden to sleep. And his legs, he said, were the size of an elephant's legs from the terrible pressure. And they tortured him psychologically as well as physically and abused him. And he finally went into a deep, dark depression. And the doctors at the prison went to the communist authorities and they said, he's going to die in prison and you're going to have another martyr on your hands. And they were trying to save his life. And what they did, they released him into a concentration monastery. Czechoslovakia had arrested all of the monks and nuns in the country and put them in concentration monasteries that were converted into labor camps. They sent him to this one concentration monastery in Bohemia where there were Roman Catholic sisters, and those sisters nursed him and took care of him, and they brought him back out of the darkness. And they called him their golden man, and he ministered to them then as a priest and became their chaplain. And in 1968, the church was partially legalized during the Prague Spring. When the Soviets invaded in August of 68, the legalization process stopped, although parishes were allowed to continue to vote as to whether or not they wanted to remain Orthodox or become Greek Catholic. Pretty much all of the parishes had at least a segment of the population that returned to the Catholic Church. And so Hopko was... he was not allowed to restore the eparchy. Another priest was named as the administrator, Father Hirka. For political reasons, that happened. But Hopko was allowed to, he was allowed to do some ordaining of men that had been seminarians back in 1950 and then of other seminarians. So he had a tough time. And throughout that, after they tested his remains after 1991, they found out someone had been poisoning him with arsenic. His arsenic levels in his bones are over 1,000 times the safe level of arsenic. So someone was killing him secretly, which is really sad. Because it had to be somebody who was close to him that could sneak the arsenic into the food. So, but, you know, the priests that met him and knew him, a couple Americans, my old bishop, Bishop Gerald Dino, knew him, and Bishop Dudick, who ordained me, knew him. And they said, you know, for all that he went through, he was such a nice man, such a kind man, such a gentle man. And he held no animosity against the people who did these terrible things to him. He was able to forgive. And, you know, I always will preach, the worst thing a priest can hear is when somebody says, I will never forgive so-and-so. Because Christ forgave on the cross, and all the martyrs since St. Stephen, all the martyrs have forgiven the people who put them on their particular cross. And Hopko was one of those guys who could do that. And I don't know how good I would be at that. You know? So he's an inspiration to me. They all are.
Yeah, that's encouraging to hear. And I'm reminded of Jesus, who of course mentions that, you know, if we don't forgive others, God will not forgive us. If we're not merciful to others, right, God won't be merciful to us.
Right. Like the gospel recently. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to get out until you pay the last penny.
Right. Yeah, know? Exactly. So, yeah. Yeah. It's so, a tough saying, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And these three bishops have really inspired my priesthood.
Oh.
Not just my writing, but my priesthood, you know. And
Father, I'm curious now. They're blesseds. So they haven't at least universally been accepted as saints. However, do we in our church already consider them saints, or could we actually go ahead and say for our church as a sui juris church, they are saints? How does that work?
Canonization was reserved to the Holy See for the last 1,000 years.
Okay.
So the process still has to go through Rome.
Okay.
And for sainthood, they require one miraculous healing attributed to their intercession. Mm-hmm. So they didn't need a miracle because they were all martyrs killed in odium fidei. They're all killed in hatred of the faith.
Yeah.
So that's how they became blessed. But now they each need a miracle in order to be declared a saint by the church.
Is there a push to bring forward their cause for sainthood?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the causes were all opened in America, of course, because there was no possibility of doing that in Eastern Europe before 1991. Now, the Eparchy of Mukachevo has the cause for Blessed Theodore Ramsha. The Archeparchy of Brešov has the cause in Slovakia for Bishops Gojdič and Hopko. And then they have other causes as well. Petro Oros, who was shot in 1953 and was secretly consecrated a bishop in 1944 by Ramsha. He was supposed to be beatified in June, but because of the war, the Ukrainian government asked that the beatification not take place because they were afraid the Russians would launch an attack on the ceremony. Because whenever there's a large gathering of people, you know, those are always high-risk events. So the beatification did not take place, but his beatification is recognized by the Holy See. So, and then there's a whole group of the Eparchy of Mukachevo of martyrs and confessors, priests who died in the camps or were murdered in the camps or were murdered at home, and priests who died as a result of their sufferings. It's a large group of priests. Their cause is moving forward. And then there's a number of similar cases from Czechoslovakia, Romania, I think there's one in Bulgaria, all, of all Byzantine Catholics, you know, that suffered for the faith. So there's quite a few.
Do you know how many our church has, how many saints we currently have that are officially canonized offhand?
From the Ruthenian tradition?
Yes.
So it would be St. Moses the Hungarian, who died at the Kiev Lavra, and because he came from the Subcarpathian Rus, and probably, I mean, just other than Moses the Hungarian and his brother, whose name escapes me now, of course. I'll think of that at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
then it would just be the others, these three, and Petro Oros, so four.
Okay.
The two medieval ones, and then these four martyrs.
Gotcha. Yeah, Alex, jump in here.
Father, do you know of any, are there any known miracles attributed to their intercession that are known in the circles?
I asked that question in the early 2000s when I was able to travel still and go over there and ask them, and I'd say, you know, do you know of miracles? And they would always say, well, the fact that we're here, Father, that's the first miracle, because Ramsha inspired the underground so much. But then there was one lady I interviewed. She said that whenever she was the daughter of a priest who had survived the gulag, came back, was secretly ministering at night. The police suspected he was ministering at night, but they could never prove it. And they would break into the house and raid the house. And whenever they did that, her mother would stand in the corner and pray to Bishop Ramsha to intercede so that her husband would not be arrested again, so that nothing would be found. They had hiding places in the house for the chalice set, for the gospel book, for the vestments, and nothing was ever found. And she said, the fact that my father was never arrested again, she said, that should be a first-class miracle. So I think that that's where a lot of the prayers went for Bishop Ramsha in particular, you know, was to save us. So now they've had to teach people, okay, now you have to pray for a miraculous cure. So I don't know of any. Before the war began, they were looking at a couple that they were investigating, but the war has put everything on hold, anything inside Ukraine, you know, because of the Russian invasion.
Wow.
So I don't know in Slovakia. I'm not sure. I'd have to ask them over there if they have anything lined up or not.
Yeah. Anything else that you had there, Alex, before we move over to chat questions?
Well, there's two things that maybe through this ministry, through Voice of Reason, through Reason and Theology, through now Our Lady of Perpetual Help online, you know, through this episode here of what we're doing, if the right people see this, if enough people see this, who knows? Maybe now with all of your viewers, Michael, let's all ask for the intercession of these three great martyrs, and we can start seeing miracles happen. Perhaps just because so many people here in the West just don't know about them. Mm. Now that we know,
yeah,
let's go and educate ourselves more,
yeah,
and let's ask for their intercession. And I promise you, if we do, I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see miracles happen. And also, one of my long, and this is the first time I say this publicly, but I've said this before to, I think I've said it to you, Father Chris, I've said it to my producer. One of the long-term goals of this ministry, maybe years down the line, I would love to see an American movie be produced about these three saints.
Oh, wow.
We've had, you know, a movie like For Greater Glory about the Cristeros in Mexico, yeah. You know, the Sound of Freedom movie that just recently came out that is really doing big things and changing a lot of people's, opening a lot of people's eyes to the ugliness of the world. It would be really cool to see like a historical piece like this. If an American movie could be made about these three men, that's a goal. That is a personal goal for this ministry. For the right people, if the right people see this, so we can make that happen. That's a story that needs to be told to the whole world, especially here in the West, that needs to be told. And the best form of telling that story is through, you know, the big screen. So a film like that could really just raise awareness of great martyrs and just educate so many people and kind of, you know, wake us up and open our eyes to what's been going on in the world now. And you know, you kind of realize that not much has really changed all that much since these events happened. So the first step is education. And Father, I know that you've written a couple of books. And if I'm not mistaken, I know I'm not mistaken because I put them right there in front of you. You have the books there, don't you?
Oh, where are they? And,
you know, you need to put in a plug for your books, Father, before we begin to do that. I set them right there for you so
I forgot.
Anybody can know. Tell us about your books, Father, what we could get.
All right. So this is from Eastern Christian Publications. Michael, this is Jack Fiegel published this.
Yeah.
So this is the history of the underground church in the Eparchy of Mukachevo. So what happened to Ramja, how he was martyred, and then and Petro Oros and how he was martyred, and the stories I collected, and how they kept the church alive. And then the revivification of the church in the 1990s and early 2000s. So this was published in 2009. And I put an appendix in because my health is rather problematic. And I put a little appendix in at the back just in case something was to happen to me about the Eastern Catholic persecutions in the communist bloc. So if somebody wants to get a summary of, you know, what happened in the other countries, you know, it's in here. So that's Eastern Christian Publications, Finding a Hidden Church. And then the other book was older. It's from 2001, The Forgotten, from Syracuse University Press. And this is available from the university, but also on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, etc. This is the Catholic Church in the USSR from Lenin through Stalin. And now I'm finishing a fourth book, Catholics in the Gulag, How They Kept Their Faith Alive in the Gulag, that hopefully will come out early next year. And then the big history book that I just finished writing, The History of the Byzantine Catholic Church, that Seminary Press will be publishing this fall.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one. I want to get you on the show to talk about that because I would like to hear more about the history of our church, and I just haven't seen a whole lot of resources out there.
No, there's not. That which is why I wrote the book. Yeah.
Yeah, right. There's a need for it. Father, if you could certainly pray for this person. This is Matt Edsel. Please pray for my miracle. I got paralyzed below the waist and am struggling. So we certainly want to keep Matt in our prayers. And there's another related one here. This is from Pop. I have a sister. I'm praying for a miracle for her. She's on dialysis. I will ask for their intercession. Thank you for telling us their story. So we need to keep them in mind as well.
You need to pray to one bishop at a time. They're not a group. They're not it's not a group of martyrs. So choose one of the three bishops to pray to. Ramja, there's prayers to bishop to each of the bishops you can find on the Archeparchy of Pittsburgh website. So choose a bishop and pray to that bishop for his intercession before the throne of God, you know, for the cure that you're asking for. So got to focus on one. That's really important for the cause.
This is from Philip Rolfs. Please give Father Chris my greetings.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. I do remember him.
You do? Okay. He says he may not remember me, but I spent some time together during the Orientale Lumen Conference in Washington about a decade ago. I gave him one of my prayer ropes. Yeah. So you
holy cow. Hello, Philip.
He sends his greetings. Father, can you spell the names of these bishops for us,
yes,
please? Do you have their? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Ramja, R. O M Z H A. Hopko is H O P K O. And then Goidich is G as in George, O J D I C. Sometimes Goidich is also spelled as G-O-J-D-I-C-H to get the ch sound in English. So, but that's how they're spelled.
Now, Father Brown says, I just got my letter giving me faculties to celebrate the Byzantine liturgy. I'm a Roman Catholic Jesuit. Any advice? And by the way, congrats, Father. Glad to
congrats. Hear. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for getting the faculties. Lord, we need help.
Yeah, we do.
we don't have enough priests
right.
at all. So thank you very much, Father, for coming on board. Golly, any advice? Good heavens, pray. which you're already doing. Just work with a good priest, reach out to Byzantine priests for guidance. Mm-hmm. I think if you make a point of incorporating some of the basic Byzantine Catholic devotions or prayers, like from Vespers and Matins into your daily life, I think that helps a lot because you get the feeling down better, the spirituality, that it's not just saying a different mass, which is how sometimes people look at it, you know, but that the richness of the theology, which obviously you feel because you wouldn't go to all the trouble of getting the faculties otherwise. But yeah, you know, I think it's important, you know, to keep up the rhythm of prayer, the rhythm of the wording of the prayers. You know, that helps a lot. Because it becomes more second nature to you. Because I have faculties in the Roman Rite, and I had to do that, you know, to get that flow in so that it would become natural to me to pray, you know, in the Western format as well as in the Eastern format. You know, although the majority of my prayer is Eastern, obviously. So, okay. Hopefully that helps.
This one is from Scar. He says, greetings to Father Chris from Poland.
Oh, niech po Polonii Jezus Chrystus.
Then we also have BK who's watching from South Africa. Bless all you guys from South Africa, Eastern Catholics.
Oh, cool. Wow. Yeah. What an audience you have. Holy cow. The internet is amazing.
I told you this was serious, Father.
I know. I know you did. That's amazing. Wow.
And now we have somebody from Glasgow. He says, sadly, the closest Byzantine mass to me is over 4 hours away in Glasgow, but it's definitely something I would love to see next time I happen to be in Glasgow. As 8-hour round trip when disabled, not easy. Yeah, no, I totally understand that. Yeah.
And for Scotland there, my mother was a Maxwell from Dumfries and Galloway. So the small world department, my mom was part Scottish. Yeah. Wow.
And Gail's from Houston. We got Ireland watching as
well.
Robert from Puerto Rico.
So. Holy cow.
So we got everybody from all over watching. So.
That's something. Wow.
So here's an interesting question. When writing books or any works about the Catholic faith, is there an editor or place where we can go that serves as a heresy check? Any way to kind of check those things?
Holy cow.
Yeah. As a writer, I mean,
that's a good idea. Central clearinghouse.
That's
a really good idea.
I mean, you do have the imprimaturs and the Neil Obstats from the local bishops, you know, certainly you can consult their local bishop.
I think you would consult consult your local diocese, see if they have an appointed theologian, a censor of books. Not everybody does anymore. You start with your local diocese. They may have somebody within the metropolitan province that the diocese belongs to who is serving as a censor laborum, they call it. So that would be somewhere to start. If you're working with a Catholic publishing house, hopefully they have someone on staff, you know, that can double check everything for you.
Greetings from Croatia. Wow.
Goodness gracious.
Now we got one from Jamaica. I'm glad to hear that. My wife will be happy to hear that. She's Caribbean, so that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Oh, here's a question for you, Father. This is from Tyler. I'm an Anglo-Catholic Church of England receiving instructions, RCIA, to join the Catholic Church. Is there any saints from other churches other than the Roman Catholic Church you might recommend? Yeah. Any others that come to mind? I mean, in addition to the ones that we're talking about here.
Gebre Michael, the Ethiopian Catholic martyr priest, Gomidas Kamudrian, who was an Armenian Catholic martyr priest. If you're thinking about Martyrs for Union. There's the Blesseds from the Romanian Byzantine Catholic Church, the bishops that were beatified that were died in Romania. Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church has a number of martyrs. The mm-hmm. Russian Greek Catholics have Blessed Leonid Fyodorov. Good golly. Mm-hmm. Of course, in Anglo-Catholic tradition, you have all the English and Welsh martyrs. Mm-hmm. Gosh. So, yeah, there's an out-of-print book by Donald Atwater, A-T-T-W-A-T-E-R, Donald Atwater, on Eastern Golden Book of Eastern Catholic Saints. And then there's another book by Michael Thompson, much more recent, that's in print, that the Redemptorists printed from Liguri Press. And he wrote about Eastern Catholic saints. So those would be two books that I would recommend going to for outside of the Latin tradition.
Hey, Father, don't we know an Anglo-Catholic also named Tyler who became a Catholic?
Yeah. He became a Byzantine Catholic.
Oh, wow. My interview with one of the other priests here, Michael, is Father Tyler Strand, fantastic, fantastic priest. And my interview with him just came out last week. Mm-hmm. Really great interview. He would be another great person to have on here too, because he's only been a priest for, what, I think, 10 years, right? In Catholic, yeah. he had a 33-year-long career as an Episcopal priest. And then after he retired, he entered the Catholic Church. Yeah. He became Byzantine. He went straight to being Byzantine.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
really unique story. And he'd be another great one to hear to come on the show. My interview with him is live now on YouTube. So,
I'd love that. Here's a couple questions for you, Father. Do y'all believe Orthodox and Catholic should become once again? What do you think about that, Father?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
This is an offense to our blessed Lord that we are not.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. I pray for unity every day.
Can I tell you a funny story, Michael? I just told the story now to you, Father Chris, but I'm going to tell you, Michael. So my producer, this past Sunday, he took a trip to an Orthodox church. And he told me this the day before. We were together on Saturday, and he says, hey, I've been emailing this Orthodox priest back and forth. I've been emailing him. I'm going to go visit him up north in Santa Fe. I'm going to go visit his parish. I'm going to go talk to him. And I said, why are you going to do that? And he said, I'm going to try to end the schism. And I said, what? He goes, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to see if I can end the schism. And I say, hey, you just found out what the schism was like last week. And he's like, yeah, I know. Someone needs to do something about this. And I said, we've been trying to do that for 1,000 years. And he said, I know. We all need to do something. So he went up and he talked to the priest up north, and he's going to try to get him to come on my show so that we can talk and we can try to end the schism, baby, of course. So if my producer, who just found out what the schism was, can go and he's doing his part, we all need to do our part. He traveled an hour north to go talk to an Orthodox priest to try to end the schism. So
that is great.
That's the kind of attitude we all need to have, don't we?
For sure. For sure.
That's true.
Father, kind of lightning round here. There's a few questions. What advice would you give Roman Catholics who are thinking about becoming Byzantine Catholics? What are some good reasons to do versus bad reasons?
Let's do the bad reasons.
Yeah.
So the bad reasons are fast. You know, if you're coming because we face the altar celebrating the liturgy, that's not a valid reason. If you're, because I don't like the Novus Ordo, well, why? Why don't you? If I'm angry, that's not why. I was raised Roman Catholic. My mom was Scottish, Irish, Welsh. My father was German. My entire family is Roman Catholic. I went into Byzantine Catholic Church. I just was drawn to it. And that's the good reasons. I was drawn to it through the icons. I was drawn to it through the prayers. I was drawn to it through the chant. And then when a church opened, or reopened in my case, when that church reopened, I walked in and I just heard a voice say, you're home. Mm-hmm. And that's why you should, if you're Roman Catholic and you think you want to be Byzantine Catholic, go to liturgy. If the liturgy is speaking to you, the prayers are speaking to you, the icons are moving you, that's a good sign. That's the Holy Spirit at work. Alex came to our church because it was the only Catholic church in the area that was open during COVID. And he, same thing, he just walked in and he felt at home. So go because you feel God is moving you there.
Here's another question from Philip. Can Father Chris speak to the differences in liturgical calendar within the Byzantine churches, i.e. Ruthenians versus Melkites? Why the difference within a single ritual tradition?
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Thanks, Philip. just a little question.
Yeah, just a little one right there.
So the Byzantine tradition is widespread from the Baltic Sea all the way over through Syria down to Palestine and Sinai Peninsula. So that's a lot of territory. So you have Slavic, you have Hungarian, and you have Arabic, you have, you know, Syriac. And that's why. I mean, you have local saints, you have local devotions, you have local traditions, local customs. You know, in Russia, they take apples to church for the Transfiguration. In the Ruthenian tradition, we bring grapes. Is, you know, because why? Apples are the fruit that's ready to go in August in Ukraine and Russia. In the Carpathian Mountains, grapes are ready to go in early August. And so that's what people bring to church. It's, you know, so you have little variations like that. You will have variations because the Melkites have their history of their martyrs in the Holy Land, in Syria, in the Turkish regions. The Slavs have their own particular saints. There's particular devotions like to Our Lady Vladimir in Russia, Our Lady of Zarevnitsa in Ukraine, Our Lady of Klokochovo or Boronyovo or Mokachovo in the Ruthenian tradition, Maria Puch in the Ruthenian tradition. So there's, you know, that's how a lot of this evolves, is local devotions, local events, local miracles, just things that happened because of the region you live in. So Our Lady of Perpetual Help is huge for the Byzantine Catholics in North America. We have a big devotion to Our Lady of Perpetual Help, which is why this parish is named for her. You know, there's just, that's how it, liturgy evolves slowly in the East, slowly, organically. Things come about for a reason. You know, and that's one of the big differences between the Roman tradition of today and the Eastern churches. The Eastern churches grow organically because of things that happen. Whereas, you know, in the Western, in the Roman tradition, you had this big change in the 1960s when the Mass was altered. Yeah, it's just, we take our time in the East. Sometimes we take too long. to grow. Sometimes we just kind of, you know, drag along. We have to be dragged kicking and screaming.
There's but, that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's reality. Okay.
Well, Father Chris, it was a blessing to have you on. We're out of time here, but I want to get your, you know, concluding thoughts and get you to put in a plug for anything that you want to make us aware of. So anything you want to point us to, you mentioned your books there. Yeah, go ahead and put in a plug and any concluding thoughts there.
You know, one thing you and I were speaking about is this National Assembly for the Byzantine Catholic Church that will be happening in New Jersey in the first week of November. That's a big thing. I'm presenting a paper there. And it's also going to be papers and talks about evangelization and outreach. I think that is something where we have been forced to be dragged kicking and screaming. Mm. That we one thing that Alex and his producer Jonathan have been doing, they plugged into this parish so well because this is an evangelizing parish that really has emphasized for decades the mission to proclaim the gospel to all people. And that's important as Christians, as followers of Jesus Christ, to bring souls to Christ through the Byzantine Catholic tradition. That is so important to be able to do. Wow. And we have a powerful, rich history of martyrdom. We have which is witnessing. We have a history of prayer. We have a history of devotion to Christ in the Eucharist. We have, you know, so much to offer the world that is so hurting and so messed up. in the last few years after COVID. And we can do that in union with the Sea of Peter and do it well. And we can do it well. And we have an obligation to do it well and to be men and women of prayer.
Well said, Father. I want to get you back on the show. This has been excellent. And I have so many other questions for you too. So if you're willing to come back on, I'm going to have you back on. Alex, if you have any parting words, any concluding thoughts, anything you want to get in there, plugs you want to put in?
Well, Father Chris, I think you've just replaced me. I think Byzantium Finest is now going to be, I don't think I'm it anymore. It's going to be Father Chris and Michael Love. I think you put me out of work, Father. But Father, we need to train you better about promoting. You didn't mention anything about you being on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. Our Lady of Perpetual Help, NM. That's all you, Father. We're going to have to train you more about this. We're going to have to do rehearsals and practice and you know, you got to promote all this stuff. So this beautiful parish that we are in right now, some of you might see that I'm in a different location. I'm in the kitchen right now, in the hall of Our Lady Perpetual Help. That's why everything looks so different around me. They're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Our Lady Perpetual Help. I'm the Voice of Reason on YouTube, where I've interviewed Father Chris, Father Tyler Strand, and Father Chris. Our interview is about to be coming out here pretty soon. It's already live on Patreon. It's a great interview. It's going to be coming out as well. We have a bunch of great content coming out for everybody. And follow both channels, both platforms, and go and read Father Chris's books, everybody. Excellent, excellent books. Go read them. We need to learn about this. And if any of the viewers, Michael, know anybody that'd be willing to make a movie about these three murders, let's do it. We can use Father Chris's books to write a script, and to Father Chris can be hired on as a consultant, and it could happen. We could do it. That's a goal. Let's make this go viral. Let's make sure everybody knows about these three great martyrs, and that everyone knows about Father Chris and Our Lady of Perpetual Help and the Byzantine Rite. And Michael, it was an honor for me to be here with both of you. I know I've appeared on your show multiple times. You really didn't need me this time, because Father Chris, once you got Father Chris, man, what more could you want? This is like, I'm probably going to make it worse, man.
No, it's going to be fun tomorrow. We're having a discussion with a Protestant.
We are, yeah. Tomorrow's going to be interesting. Tomorrow's going to be a lot of fun, too. So we're almost there with the trifecta. We got one more to go, Michael.
One more.
The trifecta, but...
Michael, this is great. Father Chris can be wisdom and reason.
Wisdom and reason.
I love it.
That's good. I love it. What member of the Wu-Tang Clan is Father Chris, Michael?
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
We'll have to think about this one now.
Yes.
We already you guys have are nuts.
We are.
Just a little.
I told you, Father, that we're a little silly.
You're both nuts.
Well, you have to have a little bit of levity in this world of craziness.
Yeah, true.
That's just how I feel. Especially if you're on YouTube every day, you need some levity.
Oh, dear Lord.
Because some of this stuff will drive you crazy.
Okay.
Well, Father, can you give us your blessing before we go?
May Christ, our true God, have mercy and save you through the prayers of his most pure mother and through the prayers of all the saints, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Blessed Theodore, blessed Basil, and blessed Paul Peter, pray for us.
Pray for us. Okay.
Amen. Thank you so much, Father. Have you back on again in the future. Thank Everybody you. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, and check out the links I'm going to put in the show notes to Father Chris's interview with Alex. And that's going to do it. We'll see y'all later.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.